Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a space for those who are healing from complex and developmental trauma. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach, survivor, and thriver. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information with insight that can validate, encourage, and support you on your healing journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors and trauma experts, featuring therapists, coaches, and practitioners. We will open up the conversation on effective trauma healing modalities, practices, and tools. If you are interested in trauma recovery coaching, as well as recommended books and healing resources, head over to www.thehealingtraumapodcast.com. And now, here is your host, Monique Coven.
So on today's episode, I'm going to be talking with therapist Annie Miller. And Annie Miller is an EMDR therapist, but she also specializes and supports people who have chronic pain as well as insomnia, whether that is difficulty getting to sleep or staying asleep. And she uses interesting modalities to work with this, and she's going to tell us all about it. So I really hope you find today's episode helpful. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you here, and I'm looking forward to talking about this particular topic of how to hope for chronic pain and managing chronic sleep issues. I know that you are a therapist that works with those issues as well as trauma, and this is something I don't think we covered yet in the podcast, yet I have met lots of people who struggle with chronic sleep issues and trying everything, as well as chronic pain. And sometimes it can feel so discouraging. So when I heard that you work with it and that you've had lots of success, I wanted to talk with you. So welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for having me.
So, you know what, let's start right at the beginning with, how is chronic pain and insomnia, how is that all, in your view, trauma related?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I like this question because I like to think about how all these, you know, all these things are connected. And so, you know, my perspective on it is that it's all related to the brain and originating from the sympathetic nervous system response in the brain, which is also known as fight or flight response. And so when we go through a difficult experience like a trauma, so this, you know, this could be a big trauma or a smaller trauma or repeated, you know, overall stressors, our brain gets into that heightened fight or flight response, perceiving that there's danger. And it starts to interpret non-threatening things as threatening. And so then this pattern repeats, and we, from there, can start to develop chronic symptoms. And what I see a lot of, you know, are things like sleep problems and chronic pain. So basically, the way I see it is the brain is the source, and the symptoms are kind of how it shows up in the body.
Okay, so that the brain has been in this kind of chronic hypervigilance.
Yes.
And then the symptoms, one of the symptoms is showing up in sleep and in pain.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Are people really surprised when you tell them that, you know, that this could be related to trauma?
You know, I find it's mixed. I think some people are surprised by the power the brain has to create a physical response in the body. I think we're kind of ingrained in a very medical model in treating you know, both sleep and chronic pain. And I think it's hard for some people to step outside that. And then other people, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. I get that. I've experienced it. I can feel what that feels like. And, you know, if you really think about it, you know, when we're nervous, we have butterflies in the stomach. When we feel a range of different emotions, we feel it in our body. It's just that we don't think that a physical response is caused by a brain related issue or emotional issue. And so we just don't think about it that way. But it does really, you know, the brain is amazing and can create a whole range of physical problems, especially when it's repeated. So when that stress response becomes chronic and kind of ingrained and habitual, then we start to see the physical responses more over time.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head because I can relate how, you know, I have a history of developmental trauma. It was chronic. There was no break. And I remember during the most stressful, I don't even want to say the most stressful time because it was completely stressful the entire time, but at one point it was extremely stressful. And I, all of a sudden, two things happened. One was I started getting these, my friends used to joke about it and I kind of joked, but it wasn't funny, that I would blow up. But really, that's what would happen. I would have hives and all kinds of things, right? And all over the place. One day my lip would be blown up like a hot dog. One day my ear, you know, no idea, like not even a clue that this could be related to what's happening. And because I couldn't express it emotionally, there was just no space for that. It was like my body was just crying out. And another experience I had probably around the same time was I had surgery. And and I've had lots of surgeries after that, not lots, but some surgeries after that with no issues in healing. But this time during this really time of my stitches just popped open.
Oh gosh.
And yeah. I had to get another surgery to deal with the, you know, what I had gone through. But again, as I look back now, it was like my body was like, I can't take it. It was speaking. Mm-hmm. So everything you're saying about the body having symptoms just really seems to make sense to me anyway. So,
yeah.
So let's get back to insomnia. And so I know that a method that you talked about to me that you use is CBT for insomnia. So maybe you could explain a little bit about, like, what is that exactly and how would it help for sleep?
Sure. And so I know some people listening might be familiar with CBT that, you know, therapists use for anxiety and other types of conditions. And CBT for insomnia is kind of its own thing and it's in its own category. And it's, so it's a therapy that's really geared towards helping people who have problems sleeping. And it's so like regular CBT, it does involve working on thoughts and behaviors. But what's different about it is it works in a kind of short-term way. So therapy using CBT for insomnia or CBTI is short-term. So we say, like, you know, 6 to 8 sessions, but I've seen people get better in 4 sessions. Yeah. And it's, so research shows it's something around the range of 70 to 80% effective, which is amazing because it doesn't involve medications. So it's really habit, behavior, and thought driven. And it's hard work, you know, it's hard work to change habits. And when we like doing things a certain way, sometimes that's a shift. But the whole goal of CBTI is to increase what's called your sleep drive, which is that innate need your body has that's for sleep. So that, like, feeling sleepy. So we actually help clients restrict their sleep window to some degree, in order to push that sleep drive. And it does really help. And it is, people feel sleepy at first, but that's the goal, right? When you have insomnia, you need to feel sleepy. So there's kind of this range of rules. We call them the CBTI rules that really like that we usually set up. And the way that I do it is I have, you know, I have people keep a sleep diary and I look at their patterns and habits over the 2 weeks before we kind of go over the rules. And then well, I can see where they're having the most struggle with it. And start to kind of gear the conversation towards what I see in their habits, if that makes sense.
Does this also help with, because I know some people say they can't, you know, they have difficulty going to sleep, but then they wake up and then they can't get back to sleep. So does this help with that as well?
It does. It does. Yeah. So, you know, insomnia generally falls into a few different categories: trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep, and then other people will have early wakening. So meaning like they wake up like early morning and can't get back to sleep, but it's close enough to their wake time that they want to be sleeping later. So those are the typical categories. So, you know, I find that the easiest thing to focus on is falling asleep. But this also can be very helpful for waking in the middle of the night. So it's generally worth a try for a lot of people who don't know about it because it's not a long-term commitment.
So can you give us like, just give us a little bit of an example so that people could get a feel for what this is exactly?
Yes. So I'll give you a quick overview of like the top rules that I use. And there's more context I give when I'm working with someone, but definitely it's helpful to have the overview. So we tell clients not to use a clock in their bedroom, which that one's tricky. For some people, it's like, oh yeah, no big deal. Other people, that's really tough. We also have them use the bed only for sleep. So what that means, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, I can't look at a screen. And that's not what this is about. You know, and the way that I teach people is that it's the bed. So this is about conditioning, like conditioned responses, meaning we start to associate the bed with other things and we don't feel sleepy when we get in bed. So we want to start to develop a strong connection that the bed is for sleep. So it's just watching TV even next to the bed or in another room. And then when you're sleepy, get in bed for sleep. The other thing that is important with this is if you can't sleep, get out of bed. So many, many people are lying there and I kind of think about this as like, you know, the day is done, it's quiet, and your brain has this wide open space to worry about everything or think about all the bad things from the past or, you know, things you're worried about happening in the future. And so we want to cut that off. And so if you're lying in bed trying to sleep, you just want to get up, go do a quiet activity. And then when you're sleepy, you get back in bed. So you don't really give your brain a chance to start that worry in bed. And that's a big one. So whether it's in the beginning of the night or the middle of the night, we're really just in bed for sleep rather than worry or other activities. The other thing that I do is when I look at the sleep diary, I kind of have a window of time and I work together with clients. So we pick a wake time that works for them, but we set up a window. So, you know, maybe your window is, I don't know, 11:30 to 7 or something like that. And so we don't want to go to bed earlier than your time. So you want to go to bed later and you want to keep your wake time the same every single day, 7 days a week. So 11:30 to 7 is just an example. It depends on what they're kind of averaging in terms of their sleep. So some people might average 7 hours a night. Some people might be more like 6 or 6.5. So we set up a window that works for them and we kind of keep it restricted in that window. So it's consistency and pushing that sleep drive again. So that's important. Things like no napping, Or keeping a nap really short, like a, 15 to 20 minute power nap if needed. And then making sure that before bed, we're not working right up until bed. We give ourselves, 1 to 2 hours of a buffer zone, where it's just relaxing activities, wind down. And then, the cognitive piece is challenging those negative thoughts, the fears around sleep. What if I can't sleep? What's going to happen then? And we all have our own, things that we attach to that. Generally, that's the overview of how it works.
If you'd like to find out more about trauma recovery coaching with me, you can visit my website at thehealingtraumapodcast.com. There you'll find a variety of ways that we could work together. So now I want to ask you about, how does trauma impact sleep?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So again, trauma puts the brain into that fight or flight response, right? And what happens then is, I find when I'm working with clients, sleep is one of the first things impacted by trauma. It's kind of where, when our brain, when trauma shows up in the brain, often for people, or anxiety, or, related conditions show up in sleep. So this can look like we talked about a little bit earlier, trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep. It can look like early awakening. But also, people can have nightmares. Nightmares is a big, very much connected to trauma. And generally, people start to develop stress and anxiety around sleep, which just heightens the whole process and makes it more difficult. And so those are the things I typically see. I mean, there's other types of sleep issues that arise from trauma. But those are the things that I'm typically seeing and treating in my work.
So you talked about nightmares. How can you treat trauma, trauma-based nightmares? Do you treat it with therapy?
Yeah. And I know a lot of people are surprised to hear that. And it's really interesting, though. The research is really good on treating trauma-based nightmares with therapy. So, people sometimes confuse nightmares and stress dreams. A lot of us will have stress dreams from time to time if we're going through a stressful period. That's how it shows up. A stress dream is something like, you're showing up in class unprepared for, and even, even as adults, we still have those dreams.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I didn't graduate.
Yeah. Or I'm sitting down to take this test and I don't know what it's about. And it's kind of funny how that seeps in, but nightmares are typically, we wake up from them and it is we're very agitated and, we're kind of in that arousal state and it's very hard to get back to sleep after having a nightmare. And oftentimes people who've gone through really deep traumas are, dreaming, the nightmare is about the trauma and it's based on the trauma. And I do see that a lot. And so there are two therapies that can really be helpful for treating trauma-based nightmares. The first one is called image rehearsal therapy. And it's really cool. It's really interesting. It is all about rewriting the nightmare, during the day before you would go to sleep. And then there's another type of therapy that's called exposure, relaxation, and rescripting therapy, which is kind of a variation on image rehearsal and the same idea of rescripting your nightmare. But it also has a relaxation component, which is like a progressive muscle relaxation. And there's a little bit more in-depth focus on what themes you feel are coming out in the nightmare. So is it helplessness? What kind of What are the themes that you might, you know, feel the most in that nightmare?
That's so interesting. So the re-scripting is, are you working with them to re-script it and working them through that?
Yeah, so they write out the nightmare in as much detail as possible and then write out a re-scripted version. And it could be, you know, it could have supernatural elements, like, you know, or things that wouldn't really happen. Like, we want to encourage, or even humor or lightness, to change the perception of the experience. And that, you know, that what the that can do for the brain in, like, you know, your conscious waking time can have an impact in the subconscious dreaming time.
Yeah, I find that so fascinating. Yeah. And because we know, like, when we think of something negative or scary, we feel it, like you were talking about butterflies. So I'm imagining when you're re-scripting, you're re-experiencing, but in a more positive, empowering way. And the brain is taking that in and hopefully changing or softening or something. Is that what you see?
I do. And I've worked with clients, you know, who are coming into therapy on medication for nightmares because it's so intense. And they've been able to get off, you know, some clients have been able to get off this medication. So yeah, it's really, I mean, it can, I think it has the potential to be really powerful for people who are dealing with these intense nightmares. And, you know, they can be really debilitating for people.
Yeah. My heart goes out to them because, you know, they suffered and they're still suffering the remnants of that, as if they're still going through it. If it's, you know, they're dreaming about it and they're, so this is sort of a way of reprocessing it, I hear.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's allowing the brain to kind of reframe it, you know, and see it differently.
Okay. Well, now I want to get into, you know, we were talking about sleep, but now I want to get into that chronic pain. And I know that you use a therapy called pain reprocessing therapy. So I really want to know, how does it work?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So pain reprocessing therapy, or PRT for short, is actually relatively new. And it's focused on the brain, which, you know, I've been talking about a lot with you today, but helping the brain to reprocess how it interprets pain. So it's really based on ideas of neuroscience, and that most types of chronic pain may not actually be due to physical injuries or structural problems in the body. So even if the original source was an injury, pain can become chronic over time because of the brain's response. So, you know, an injury heals, but the pain may stick around. And if we have gone through trauma or experienced, you know, adversity, our brain might be more likely to kind of hang on to those patterns because it's more kind of in that state of fight or flight more of the time. And so that can lead to more levels of chronic pain, or can kind of make pain become chronic over time.
Yeah, that I'm, as you're talking, I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, think about the patterns that we've learned, our nervous system has learned and sticks to, even though the trauma is technically over. Very, very interesting. So how does that therapy, can you give us a little feel for how that would work?
Yeah, sure. And I think it's helpful here to kind of have this distinction up front, because I think sometimes people get a little concerned about, well, does that mean pain is in my head? And almost, you know, I want to assure people, no pain is ever imagined. And so just, I'm actually a former chronic pain sufferer, so I know this, you know, when you have pain and they can't find a source, and it's like, well, but I feel this pain and it's real. And so I want to, you know, want to kind of tell people, of course it's real. It is always real. You're really feeling it. But the distinction here is that the brain can, so all pain comes from the brain, and right, that heightened nervous system response can make pain worse and can perpetuate the cycle of chronic pain. So we're not telling anyone that there's no pain or that it's imagined or it's psychological. It's there, but we need to work with the brain to kind of reduce the pain in it, you know, and a lot of people are out there getting medical treatments, and we just want to give this component because this is an important part of it. So what we do is there's an education piece of this, like teaching about the neuroscience of pain and how it works, not in great detail, but just so people can really grasp it. And then what we do is we work with clients to help them see patterns in their own life of how their pain might respond differently in certain situations. So like, let's say you feel pain when you're sitting, but then when you had that really fun time at like a concert sitting, you didn't feel the pain. Well, why is that? Right. And so we look for these kind of gathering and reinforcing evidence that maybe it is more due to the brain than you think it could be. And then we have a practice of viewing pain sensations through a lens of safety. And this practice is called somatic tracking. So it's kind of like a meditative mindfulness practice where we really sit with the pain, feel it, and start to relate to it as if it's not dangerous. And just a couple other pieces to the therapy are focusing on positive sensations. So our brain starts, you know, when we've gone through difficult things, our brain is kind of laser focused on the negative and anything that doesn't feel good. And we want to start to practice shifting that pattern to positive sensations. And then generally looking for those things in your life that cause that are triggers for you, you know, that cause that fight or flight state, that heightened nervous system arousal.
Yeah, I love that. That sounds so good. And it makes so much sense. So how can, and maybe you already explained this, but how can negative emotions and trauma lead to chronic pain?
Sure. Yeah. And I like this question too, because again, we talked about it a little bit before, but I think we are so ingrained in that physical, that it like something physical is physical. But generally speaking, every time we have a thought or an emotion, it releases, you know, a response in the brain. So if we feel fear, or if we feel shame, right, those kind of negative emotions release, you know, hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. And that response happening in the brain trickles down to our physical body. So the cortisol and adrenaline we feel causes our heart rate to increase, our muscles to tense up, we breathe more shallowly, we can even be hot, like our palms get sweaty, things like that. And so when our body responds this way, pain can actually be a result, you know, that muscle tension and things like, so kind of like what we talked about with butterflies in the stomach, sometimes we can have GI issues, right? This is kind of common. If I'm really nervous, my stomach might kind of act up. And so pain is similar, is when we have that response, pain is kind of a warning signal. Hey, there's something going on here. We need to pay attention. And so that's how, you know, we focus on pain, and emotions, is that emotional, that negative emotion can really create pain.
Again, this makes so much sense. Really? Yeah. So what do you think we're getting wrong about treating pain?
Yeah, you know, and, again, you know, this is something I said a little bit before, but our typical thought is we have pain, we go to the doctor, we either take medicine or we get a you know, an injection or something that's physical. And I don't want to knock those things because actually, I mean, you know, when people need treatments like that, they're unbelievable, right? They can really make a big difference. But I think the hard part is that if the brain is continuing the same response, the treatments are kind of like a band-aid, right? So, you know, if you're kind of in that fight or flight state, flooding your system with stress hormones, that can only do so much. And it's, so we do, I think we have to have that brain component in addition to other treatments you're doing, or even starting with the brain component to see how you can, how far you can get with that. So that's the way I see it. And I think shifting the way we think about it can be really helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think that the same thing would make sense for somebody with, you know, anxiety, or, you know, is that if you were just to use the medication and not do anything else to support yourself, then I, you know, it could be helpful, but maybe not to the degree that you're hoping for, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's really great. So this was very, very, very interesting. And I hope that it gave people some hope and some resources to think about or look into. Is there anything before we close you would like to share?
I mean, I think just to, like, for people to, you know, people listening, to keep an open mind about insomnia and chronic pain, that I do think there's so much, you know, so many reasons to be hopeful here, because I've seen some amazing things. And I'm really passionate about these things because I know they can change. And I know therapy and kind of working on it from this perspective can really help. And I also wanted to share that I recently created an online course for chronic pain that really focuses on pain reprocessing therapy. And that's going to be available really soon. And I hope people can find that, you know, people who can't access therapy or, you know, they're more limited to engage in something like that, that I'm most hoping the course could help people.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you. We will put a link to your website and they can find the resources and information there. But I thank you for being here and sharing with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so great talking to you.